I think there's a part of me that's trying to help people get there faster than I did, but it's not easy. It really takes the idea of understanding that one, it could always be worse. And two, that when you fail, you come out with two things. One, you come out with a phenomenal story because you leaned in and you get to tell this story and help others also lean in. But also you have this idea in your head of, okay, if I forget that this feels negative, because failure feels negative, it's not negative, but it feels bad.
This is Taking the Lead, a podcast for B2B tech professionals, leaders, and executives who want to learn from female icons in the tech industry. In each episode, host Christina Brady interviews women who are driving revenue for some of the most respected tech companies in the world. Are you ready to get inspired?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Taking the Lead. I am Christina Brady. I am your host. And like all episodes, I have a wonderful, phenomenal woman on the show, Jennifer Ryan. Welcome.
Thank you.
I am excited to dig in. So you are currently the Director of Global Sales and Pre-Sales Enablement, which I want to dig into that because I have not run into a lot of pre-sales enablement professionals, and I think more people need to focus there. So we're going to get there in a minute. But before that, you've had an amazing career at BlackLine. You've been at LexisNexis. I know I first met you because you were speaking at ATD Cell, and you're a wealth of knowledge and a joy to be around. I would love to just hear your professional career, your story, however much you want to tell, and how you got to where you are.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me. There are moments in life where you're like, I think this could be it. And this might be one of those moments. So
very excited.
So my career, I feel like I've been stumbling through life and just seem to land in places. So I started off in actually procurement randomly. And I made friends with some of the guys in IT. And one of the evenings, it was a Thursday, actually, one of the guys came up to me and he said, are you interested in IT? I said, absolutely. He goes, great. Meet us here at 7 o'clock and we'll teach you how to get through the interview. And then Friday morning, we'll interview you. And then Monday, we'll offer you the job. It was very random.
I wish every interview cycle were kind of like that. Like, we're going to do it and then we're going to hire you to do it. And then we're going to pay you to do it. You'll be good to go.
It started because I played softball with them. So yeah. And so I fell into IT, and then I started off on a help desk and then moved to desktop support. And I went to my boss and I said, you know, we could do this so much better if we just put together training and the top 10 things that we're getting calls from the help desk on, if we trained them ahead of time, they wouldn't call us so much. And I really don't like it when they call. So I started training. And then I met the people in sales and I said, hey, you guys are doing sales training. Can I just sit in the back and listen? Can I be involved? I'll come in on the weekend. What do you need me to do? And I fell into that. From there, I was a system administrator. I was a QA engineer. From there, one of my buddies from the help desk met his wife on Match.com. And he called me and he said, she wants to hire somebody to be a database administrator for legal databases. Are you interested? And I'm like, I don't know anything about that. And she said, I just need somebody I can trust. I can teach you how to do the job. And I fell into that. Really, it's just stumbling through life, through people.
And this isn't really stumbling so much as like aggressively and fantastically catwalking through life. I mean, this isn't a stumble. You're on parade. This is the best. Keep going. I'm on the edge of my seat.
So I was a database administrator, and then I got laid off, and my boss said, I'm really sorry we have to do this. Let me see if I can find something else in the company for you. Just hold on. So I was laid off, but still employed.
Cool.
And the head of the training department said, you know, I think it would be great if we had a trainer who had a background in music. And what? So, yeah. And so I got a job as a trainer. I do. I studied music education, music therapy at the University of Kansas. So I got the job because I had been a performer and found my place, that of all the jobs I've ever had, being in front and training was phenomenal. And so I became a customer trainer. And then from there, I became a solutions consultant.
Oh my God. This is like a clown car of amazing jobs, or I don't know what's going to come next, but I hope it's something crazy. Like, I hope this is, keep going. This is amazing.
So, well, we called ourselves technical consultants because we did training, solutions consulting, and some implementations. And my boss, who was the head of sales, came to me one day and he said, look, you're skirting around everything in the business, but until you understand sales, you can't understand business. So you have two choices. You can either do sales enablement or you can carry a bag. And I said, what's sales enablement? I'll do that. And I fell into sales enablement.
Is that the last time you've fallen? Are you at the top shelf now or the bottom shelf? Like, if we look at, like, I feel like you're rolling up, though, like in a good way, though.
Absolutely. I had one other fall that actually was the very best thing that happened to me at Blackline. Was I started at sales enablement at Blackline. And I mean, I can talk to anybody about anything. That's truly my gift. But I knew I was just giving my people information by rote, but I didn't really understand what I was talking about. And so I met a woman who's actually one of my personal board of director members. And she said, you know, we're doing this process. We're called strategic innovation. And we go into our largest customers and we take their data and we show them the art of the possible inside our product. Do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, I sure do. And so on a team of 13 accountants, I was the one non-accountant.
Yes.
Then I came back to enablement.
Yeah. And then you came back to enablement and you're still rocking that out. You mentioned something there. You said she's on your personal board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a Jenniferism? Is this a thing? What is this?
No. Actually, this particular person told me about it. She's like, you're on my board of directors. And I'm like, what is this magical thing? I need a board of directors. She's like, you do. Okay. And it's really about understanding your strengths, but more importantly, understanding the gaps in your armor and finding people that help you fix them. Fix them. You can't fix everything, but at least being aware of where you have gaps in your personality and knowing how to work with people to help utilize their strengths, they utilize yours, and that partnership makes you stronger together.
Yeah.
So board of directors.
Okay. Well, now everybody needs a personal board of directors. It feels like these people that are looking out for helping you continue to identify the best version of you, which I couldn't imagine a better thing, right? It's like a professional village.
Yes. It is. Yeah. It's a different look at mentoring.
Different look at mentoring or sponsoring if we're women, right? Mentorship is cool. Help us get amazing jobs. Although for you, you're unbelievably tappable, and I want to drill into that. But your story made me think about sort of how I wound up falling into improv. So one of the things that I think folks are learning about me is I, like you, come from this artistic background. For me, it's much more theater, performance, whatever. And the way that I actually got into improv and performing at Improv Olympic in Second City in Chicago is I was in college, and there was a workshop that they did, and they brought somebody in from Second City to lead this workshop, and you could sign up for it and pay extra. And so I had been taking classes, and I was like, oh, I love this. I want to do this workshop at school. So we're doing this workshop. And of course, I just lose myself in it, and I'm stepping up and I'm having fun. And at the end of the workshop, the leader of the workshop comes over and he was like, hey, have you heard of my show? And at the time it was called The Cupid Players, a long running show in Chicago. And I said, yeah, oh my God, of course I've heard of The Cupid Players. He's like, I want you to come to the show. You're going to be my guest. You're going to be my guest on Saturday. And I was like, oh my God, great. So I go to the show. There's like a seat with like my name taped on it, Ferris Street. And I'm like, okay. So I sit down and I just watch the show. And after the show, he comes over and he's like, what did you think of the show? And I was like, I thought it was amazing. I was like, I can't believe I haven't seen it before. And he said, okay, well, next week, I want you to come back again. He's like, but this time do me a favor. Could you wear all black? And I was like, okay. Sure. So the next Saturday, I come back, same chair, my name on it. I sit down in it before the show. He peeks around the corner. He comes out and he was like, come here. And I was like, okay. So I get up and I go backstage and he's like, hey, everybody, this is Christina. She's in the show tonight. And I was like, and they're all like, hey, Now, this was not a traditional improv show where you're like, somebody give me the name of like a mode of transportation in a city in Australia. It's like, this was musical sketch comedy combined with improv. So there was pre-rehearsed numbers. And so so all the color drains from my face. And he's like, don't worry, you'll be fine. And the cast is like, okay, we're going to teach you the songs real quick. And the show's starting in like 5 minutes. And I'm like, you're going to teach me the songs real quick. And they're like, look, work this. Just hum along and just follow us and just do weird stuff. And I'm like, do weird stuff. So sure enough, I wind up being in the show. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just flying by the seat of my pants. And I just, at that point, I'm like, you know what? Who cares? I'm going to have fun. I'm going to figure it out. I had an absolute blast. And then at the end of the show, I was like, that was a bucket list item. I didn't realize that I had. Thank you for letting me be in it tonight. He's like, no, you're in it. I'm like, he's like, no, you're a part of the cast now. You're in the show. And then I did that for 10 years after that. And it's like the same thing of just like, you fall into these things, but there's something about you that's tappable where people keep looking at you and going, I know you don't know how to do this, but I need you to do it. What do you think, if you're being introspective, makes you so tappable to so many people in so many different situations?
I say yes. Yeah. It's just a yes, and there's no fear, and I'm willing to try anything because I'm okay with failing miserably. Ooh. That's totally fine with me.
How do you get okay with failing? Because I think people say that, and then when you actually do fail, which we all have, it's really hard and you don't want to do it again, right? Like if you've really failed one time, and everybody has.
Of course.
But being unafraid of that, especially when it's happened one time, how do you get over the fear of failure?
You know, it doesn't happen overnight. And I know sometimes when I talk about it, I make it sound easy. I think there's a part of me that's trying to help people get there faster than I did, but it's not easy. It really takes the idea of understanding that one, it could always be worse. And two, that when you fail, you come out with two things. One, you come out with a phenomenal story because you leaned in and you get to tell this story and help others also lean in. But also you have this idea in your head of, okay, if I forget that this feels negative, because failure feels negative. It's not negative, but it feels bad. So once you get past that feeling of it, you're like, okay, so what happened? I leaned in. I met some new people. I tried something new. I have a good story. You know what? That made me think maybe I could do this. Oh, well, maybe there's this. And then your brain starts to go and the ideas start to come and you think, that wasn't so bad. Look what I got out of it. And you start looking at the outcomes as positive instead of the feeling of negative failure.
Yeah. I think,
but it's also a process.
It's a huge process. And it sounds like it's almost redefining failure a little bit. Because if you think about all of the jobs that you've taken on, were there any of them that you took on where after you got in the role and you're doing the job, I don't want to say you felt a sense of failure. Maybe you did. But did you realize, okay, I took this leap. This was not the right leap for me. And then what did you do if that happened?
When I took on QA, I took it on because I got to a point, and I always tell people that, especially in jobs, I'm like the violinist on the Titanic. I just keep playing the pretty music while everything is going down around me.
Breathing and drowning.
Yeah. Because, you know, at least they've got something positive in this horrible situation. But when I took the job at doing QA, it was time for me to go. I had stayed too long at the last place. And it was a lifeline and I just grabbed it. It wasn't the right move for me, but it was available. So I took it. But what I realized is that once you get to know the people around you and you start to open your eyes for opportunities, yes, I had to do QA. Yes, I did not like it. I wasn't very good at it. But I also got to run a server farm of 142 servers. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you don't have an admin. Can I administer the whole server farm? Because that I can do. And then I found some joy in that one thing till I found that next thing.
There's something about artists that have, it's either we're gluttons for punishment or we just view, and maybe we are, but like you view the world in a way of just, you have that yes mentality first and there's fear, but I don't know, maybe there's something about artistic expression where you are face to face with the deepest sense of human fear possible by being vulnerable and exposing your art or your talent, that in work, it just feels like the stakes are easier, right? It's like it doesn't feel as personal. It's work, just leaning in. You talked about taking the lifeline. And I actually think that a lot of times professionally, people look, they frown upon taking a lifeline, right? It's like, don't jump to a job that you don't want. Don't make a quick rash decision. And so many of us so often just need the lifeline. And how did you know that the right decision for you at that time was to take the lifeline that might not be right, but you needed it in that moment? How did you compartmentalize that?
Usually for me, I'm a fairly positive person. I like people, so I can make the best out of almost any situation with the right people. So I'll have a good time. I'll tell a good story. We'll laugh, and then I'll do whatever that horrible thing is, and we'll move on. But when I come into a place and the people don't matter anymore, I know I've gone too long. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten a little bit better on not letting it get that bad. But this was early on in my career where I leaned in hard to, it's horrible and I'm angry and blah, 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 whatever it was. So, yeah. But I think there was a point, a gentleman I worked for, his name was Keith James. And Keith, I remember he said to me, Jed, I need you to do XYZ. And I said, nope, not going to do it. Doesn't make sense. This is why, like, that doesn't make sense. It's the wrong move. And he looked at me and he always had this way of being very calm. And he said to me, yeah, find a different yes.
Ooh.
And in that moment, everything shifted for me because no became not an option anymore in anything. Like, there was no reason to say no to anything anymore because I could find the right yes for you and the right yes for me. And it brought about this idea of every situation has to be a win-win because I'm a naturally a, I'll give everything up to help you. And it was sucking the life out of me. And so finding that win-win in professional, in personal, allowed me to take care of me and still feel the need to take care of others. So those were pivotal points. Like every point, there's been this pivotal point that changed my mindset.
I mean, that one was quotable, find a different yes. Do you remember in that moment what you wound up doing with that, we'll call it opportunity, when you said, no, this is the wrong move, not going to do it. And you said, find a different yes. Do you remember what you did?
I did. I thought about, okay, what is it that I'm saying no to? What is that minimal viable product that is a hard stop for me? And then how do I make all the rest a yes for him?
Oof. Oof. See, this is the paradigm shifting I'm talking about. This is what we need. And I'd be willing to think that you use this also a lot. I mean, in enablement, when you are trying to help companies and organizations get on the same path, or you're trying to help with learning and development, or you're trying to do all of the program management that comes along with the job that you do, you probably come face to face with a lot of people that say, I can't, I won't, I don't know how, I need you to help me. And if we know you're in enablement, we know that everything kind of runs downhill and lands on your plate, right? Because when organizations don't know what to do with something, they're like, you know, who should handle it? Enablement should do this. And so your yes mentality probably helps and hurts you. Finding yourself an enablement seat, do you feel like you found the right place that is sort of this amalgam of all of your talent, or is this a temporary place until you pivot elsewhere?
I don't know the answer to that one because I don't, unfortunately or unfortunately, I don't have a plan. It's yeah. I'm just waiting for that next thing to happen because it always does. But it's funny, now that I have a team of incredibly talented people, I tell them all the time, I'm like, if they're ever looking for the weak link on our team, I'm it. With the rest of you, I'm that weak link. They joke with me because I'll come into my team meeting. I'm like, okay, I have an idea. And they're like, oh God, what now? So when I say yes, they're like, whoa, pump the brakes. And so they keep me from saying yes to everything, thankfully, because there's still that people pleaser in me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've often said that if you think that you're the smartest person in every room, you don't deserve to be in that room. And if you are the smartest person in that room, then you're in the wrong room, right? It's that learning mentality of, I need to punch above my weight class. And I firmly believe that you can learn something from everybody. I have this sort of circle mentality about how I view just human beings in general, where none of us are above anybody else, right? It's not a triangle. If you think about corporations, there's this idea of this triangle. If there's the people at the top that you naturally think are brilliant and they know everything and they deserve to be there and they're wise beyond their years, which in so many cases they're not, but we think they are because they're at the top of this little pyramid, right? And then as you go down the pyramid, now you're getting down to like the middle management and the frontline management and the individual contributors and the brand new people and the interns. And if you're naturally at the bottom of that pyramid, you believe you have nothing to offer. And I've had so many AEs when I first come into a company say something to me like, look, I know that I'm just an AE, but this is my feeling. And I'm like, see, that's a cultural thing that we have to shift because you are never just anything. You are a human being walking in this room with experience that I can't even fathom. And if I don't believe that I can learn from you, then that's my failure, not your failure. And so there's this idea of like, there's a circle and we're all playing different roles here, but nobody's above anybody else. And it sounds like you foster something similar with your people where you're willing to be vulnerable. Have you always been vulnerable with your people?
There are varying degrees of vulnerability. I have spent a very, very large part of my life being this or this, very binary, on or off, like completely bare your chest, like spread the ribs and here's my art and here's a sharp arrow to no, you can't have anything and stay out there. And as I've gotten older, that is also, there's been a more gray. And as I learn, the gray is the better place to be because it gives you so many more options, especially with something like vulnerability. So I think that there is, and people will laugh at me, but there's a humility in knowing the degrees of vulnerability. And I am not a humble person. It's not really in my makeup. But I've been called humble. I'm going to take that to the grave, that will be my greatest achievement of 2023, as I was called humble.
Someone called you humble.
Yeah. Three people called me humble.
Well, yeah. That's a fact. If you've heard it three times.
It's the scientific method. Three times. But what I did do in lieu of vulnerability was I empowered my people to just try some stuff. I created what we called, and it actually wasn't my idea. It was the idea of one of the people that work for me. We call it Game Jam Day. And it's the third Friday of every month. And I told them on Game Jam Day, block your calendar. Nothing happens on that day. And on that day, I want you to just do something wacky, do something cool, do something that is completely out of the realm that you've never tried before. And then let's see how we can use it. And if nothing happens, at least we had fun doing it. So there's some positive in everything. It keeps them creatively working. Now, do we always get to keep our Game Jam Day? No, because life.
Life.
Yeah. But funny, I can't remember what your question was, but
it doesn't even matter anymore. I asked about vulnerability, but see, this is the joy of it. We wound up in a better place. We wound up in a better place. Your binary way of thinking and the fact that it's like, it's this or it's this. Were there experiences in your life that led you to thinking like that and existing like that? Or is that just sort of how you're wired and how you've always been?
It may be how I was wired, but as I was looking back, and I have a tendency to take stock of my life, of the choices I made, of the decisions, of everything, because I want to see, I don't like to repeat the same mistakes if I can help it. So what I found was in that binary mindset, it was really steeped in fear. Everything was fear of what other people are going to think, fear of failure, fear of success, which was a bigger one for me, fear of not doing it right, fear of who knows, irrational fear. And it's funny because I recently found a quote, I wrote it up here on my wall, fear, forget everything and run or face everything and rise.
Oh, you keep dropping these amazing nuggets. I can't write them down fast enough.
That's not mine. I found it. It was one of those things that I was like, la, 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 what's happening on, you know, Pinterest because I'm putting in a new kitchen or, you know. Right. Yeah. And And I founded it, and it just happens. These things come. And when you you're open to the world to experience, that's when the things come. When you're looking for the things, it's like when people say to me, oh, say something funny.
Oh, God, I have
nothing funny will ever come out of your mouth.
I've never been less funny than I am right now.
Yep. Correct. But it doesn't mean that everything has to be completely spontaneous. Like, and I constantly make goals for myself to keep the momentum going. I don't know if you've ever heard of The Moth. Moth was a show on NPR, and it's a show about storytelling. And they have story slams where you can just show up, and they've got a theme for the day, and you sign up, and if your name gets picked out of a hat, you go up on stage and you tell your story. Has to be real, has to be appropriate for the theme, et cetera. And I put it on my bucket list. And I went with a group of friends and I said, look, I'm going to put my name in. And if it happens, it happens. And a friend of mine said, you know what? We'll all sign up with different addresses, but with your name, and it'll guarantee you get it. And I said, nope, it has to be authentic. It has to be the right time to do it. And if it is, it'll happen. And I was picked number 7 out of 10.
Oh my God. So you got to do your story.
I did. And it was people, you know, afterwards, people were like, oh, wow, you know, you look so comfortable. I was shaking like a leaf. Like I could feel everything shaking. But that moment of there's nothing to lose in trying something new, that my hands were shaking, but that's okay. My voice shook a little bit in the beginning, but that's okay. Like all of that is part of the story. It's part of the experience. And you lean into those things. And so, you know, it was this, the theme was bizarre. And I told this story about being attacked by a woman in a McDonald's drive-thru because it was bizarre. She attacked me with a plastic fork.
What?
So, yeah.
Okay, well, just real quick, like, yeah. Tell the story because now I'm picturing it and I don't know if it's accurate. Like, did she get out of her car? Yeah. She had a fork. Yeah. Why? Was it provoked? Was it unprovoked?
So, you know, I went to get a Diet Coke. And so, because they have the best Diet Coke at McDonald's.
Yesterday, like a big one.
Yep. See? So it's single file. So she pulled up to the speaker, but a young woman came to my window so that they could take two orders at the same time. But she stared at me crazy through her side mirror and then got out of the car and, you know, was like screaming at me, are you ordering before me? And I'm like, no, like it's a single file line. Like this all makes such logical sense. I don't understand what the problem is. And then she came, was like banging on my window. And she was like this gargantuan, like football playing woman. Oh. And then like took out this plastic fork. And I thought, okay, great. This is how I die.
This is it. I'm going to die with plastic fork. Which?
Death by forking.
Right. Death by plastic forking. Right? Yes. Like you have to really, you know, but yeah. I think, you know, a hurricane can put a piece of hay through a tree trunk. So I feel like a plastic fork with the right force, maybe the strength, the brute strength of this woman could have easily.
Absolutely. I mean, she was crazy. I mean, seriously crazy. Like the things that she said that were just, but it makes for an amazing story.
It does.
And the best part about it was like, I called my mom after it happened and I told her, I'm like, I tried to make myself so small so that she wouldn't be intimidated and I could de-escalate the situation. And my mom's like a bear attack? Like, yes, exactly like a bear attack.
The bear spray. I mean, but isn't that what we do, right? I mean, I don't know. Now you're bringing me back to, I just thought about all the times professionally where I've been in a room and had a seat at a table and things get intimidating and you very naturally make yourself small and non-intimidating. And most of the time it's so you can either be heard or so you can be safe. And whether it's a crazy huge woman with a fork or, you know, an unwielding chaotic CEO that is attacking your ideas, we often try to make ourselves smaller and less threatening.
Yes. So
there. Yeah. Last thing I want to ask is mentioned a fear of success.
Yeah. Right?
I've heard this before, but I don't think it's talked about enough. And when you say fear of success, I view that almost as more of like a limiting belief, a non-growth mindset. But for you, where did your fear of success come from? And what does that look like? Why, why are people afraid of succeeding?
I think for me, it's twofold, the fear of success. One is the more success you have, the more vulnerable you are. And I'm not really a very vulnerable person. So that was part of it. The other part is that the more success you have, the higher the fall when it all comes crashing down. And it's always that other shoe mentality of this can't possibly be real. And there are often times when I think about all the things, because I've had amazing experiences, and sometimes I have to pinch myself and think, did I make this up? Is this real? And so there are moments and I'll have like horrible dreams. Like I'll wake up in fact, a couple of years ago, I had a dream that I got a call from my university saying, you didn't actually get your degree because you never graduated from high school.
How do they know?
I did that. I did do it, right? But there's this fear is not rational. There's nothing about it that's rational. Emotion is not rational. And when we try to put logic onto emotion, that's where everything goes awry. So that fear of success is that vulnerability. But the other side of it, as a child, I was a horrible egomaniac. Horrible.
As a child? I think all children are egomaniacs. My five-year-old's an egomaniac. He knows everything, just so you
absolutely
know.
Absolutely. But I was really vocal about telling everybody that I was better than them. And it's as an adult now, it's a horrible point of shame for me. But there's always that fear of I would go back to being that worst part of me if I have too much success. So I limit myself so that I can always be the best part of me, because what's the success really going to get me? I'm successful enough. I'm good enough. But there's always, is that the story I tell myself to handle the fear, or is that the reality? And so that's where that all comes from.
And this sounds like an active debate happening in your brain all the time.
Oh, absolutely. It's crazy train up here.
Well, from, aren't we all? From, I actually don't know any sane people, and I like it that way.
Me too. They're much more fun.
Yeah, the sane people I don't really get along with. I would say from the bit of time that we've known each other and spoken, you're exactly the kind of person that I think the world needs more of. And it's always the incredible people that I come across that have this belief of maybe I'm good enough. Maybe it's not too much. And I think the best people in the world sometimes don't get where they want to go because of exactly what you just laid out. So if my opinion means anything, more of you, more.
Oh, thank you.
Higher, better. Speaking of higher, better, more, we are inching into our rapid reveal section. When I'm looking at your questions now, the first one makes me laugh after hearing your career. But number one, what did you actually want to be when you grow up?
I wanted to be an astronomer.
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to be an astronomer. My stepdad took me up into the mountains because he had a friend who was an astronomer. And then we sat there for 4 hours freezing with hot chocolate looking at stars. And I'm like, I don't want this. This is boring.
Like, this is what you guys do? It's like a stakeout, right? Which sounds like it's going to be really fun. And then you're like, maybe I'm going to sit in a car for 18 hours and see nothing. It's not as sexy in real life.
No, it really isn't.
Number two. What's an irrational fear of yours?
I'm a little afraid to tell you right now.
Is that the fear? Afraid of talking about your fears?
No. I have a horrible fear of bugs.
Okay.
Like, are you debilitating?
You know, I'm going to torture you with bugs.
No, I'm so afraid. You have no idea. So one in particular instance, my partner, there was a bug in the house. And I pushed her towards it, ran to the bathroom and locked the door. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I just panicked. It's right there. And my skin is crawling and I got tears in my eyes. And she's like, you know, it could come under the door. And then I was like, yeah, no. Oh, I have the chills right now even thinking about it. It's so horrible.
I love how our partners deal with us dealing with bugs. Bugs don't bother me anymore, but they did. When my husband and I were younger, we were hanging out, and you know, one of those, you know, I call them nightmare bugs, but they're those like thousand legger centipede things that, you know, I know. And I'm sorry. I know this is a fear of yours. Now I'm just drilling into it. Well, anyway, we're sitting on the couch and this thing is like, what? Goes up the wall. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, get it. Like, I freak out. I was like, well, I get up on the couch and he's like, what am I supposed to kill it with? And I was like, there's a pack of wipes right there. And this caveman grabs the whole pack of wipes and smashes it with the whole pack. No. Take a wipe. That's it. Now we got to clean the wipes and clean the, you know, so. Very similar, people's survival instincts, right? Like, yes, me bash with rock. Like, come on. And then I was like, I have to do it myself. Like, I have to do everything else. So bugs.
Okay. I cannot do it myself. So thankfully. Yeah.
If we're ever in the same room and there is an arachnid or beetle of some kind, I'm going to save you. You have my word. Number three, what's the last great idea you had?
Well, it's a work in progress right now, so I feel a little whatever about sharing it. But I was in Vegas earlier this year at a conference, and I was, you know, when you're in Vegas, you walk around, you buy irrational things. And so I was walking through the Caesars shops, and they have those massage chairs, and they, like, you are a captive audience. Like, they lock you in. So they have this thing that goes around your arms, it clamps around your legs, and you're like, you're not going anywhere until you look at all of our stuff. So I'm sitting in the massage chair of torture, and they come riding by on this suitcase that's also an electric scooter. So I bought it because that's what you do.
Yes.
Buy this or you're stuck forever.
Go on.
So I have ridden, I call it the scoot case. I have ridden the scoot case through many an airport, and I've had people videotape me. I've had other people, Steph White, Matt Schalzi, Steph Middaw, have all ridden it and videotaped themselves doing it. And I thought, this is gold. I've ridden through airports and people have watched me, and I have deep thoughts while I'm riding. I'm actually starting a video series of like deep thoughts on the scoot case.
Did you just call it a scoot case?
I did. So I call it the Scoot Case Chronicles.
All right. This is a great idea. This makes me want to fly to wherever you are and participate in this. But kind of like I feel like only if it goes ridiculously slow. Like if I act like I'm going to make a quick exit and then it's an Austin Powers level, like very slow. Yeah. Because how fast would we go? Like, what's the top speed?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, we should test that as part of the series of just
we
like
should.
We should have a high octane episode where it's like, you know.
I mean, it's faster than you can walk.
Well, like floor it, you know, like floor it on a fast floor, a little bit downhill. Let's see what kind of momentum.
There are no brakes. Let's put that in there too.
You got to just jump off.
Yeah, but you got to, you know, Barney Rubble it, put your feet down.
I can't stop. And you just fall over. That's one way to do it.
I did get video footage of me doing that, though. So that should be fun.
It's for the series. It's for the greater good.
It is.
Speaking of greater good, you're as wonderful and more so as I thought that you were. And I can imagine that, one, giving your breadth of experience, your delightful personality, incredible storytelling, people are going to want to get to know you. People might want to connect with you. I can imagine some people may want you to mentor them just because your mindset is ideal for people who need to get out of their shell a little bit. So how do folks contact you? How do they find you? What's the way?
LinkedIn is probably the best way right now. There are plans for a website, but life happens. Scoot Cakes Chronicles. Coming soon to LinkedIn near you.
Well, thank you for coming and sharing all of your wisdom and your laughs on the show. It's been phenomenal.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Taking the Lead. If you're looking for more inspiring stories from women leaders in B2B tech, then visit us at motionagency.io/takingthelead.